Welcome to Menachem Begin, His Life, Legacy, and Uniquely Jewish Statesmanship, a limited series podcast brought to you by Tikva and MeirSoloveitchik.com. This special series is sponsored by the Hart N. and Simona Haston Family Foundation in partnership with the Menachem Begin Heritage Center in Jerusalem. The episodes in this study of Prime Minister Begin's remarkable leadership are drawn from Rabbi Soloveitchik's comprehensive, year-long podcast on the history of the most interesting city in the world, Jerusalem 365. Jerusalem 365 is available at MeirSoloveitchik.com. And now, on to Begin. This is episode number 5, Ben-Gurion, Begin, and the Politics of Israel.
It was in 1949 that the first elections were held for the Knesset. Mapai, the party of David Ben-Gurion, received 45 seats in the legislature, while Chirut, the party led by Menachem Begin, received only 14. Ben-Gurion not only made clear that he would never allow Begin's party in the governing coalition, he also made manifest his animosity for Chirut's leader inside the Knesset. As Avi Shilon writes, quote, "When Begin took the podium, Ben-Gurion usually left the plenum chamber. When he did listen to him and decided to respond, he referred to Begin as the Knesset member who sits to the right of Yochanan Bader, and not by his name." End quote. During this period, the young state of Israel faced many challenges. One striking feature of this period is that we now also know that as Ben-Gurion was building the state, the seeds were also being sown for the future rise of his rival. In the several years that followed Israel's founding, Ben-Gurion oversaw the creation of the structure of the state, the absorption of immigrants, and, most importantly for Ben-Gurion, the institution of an Hebraic character for every element of the state. This is captured most amusingly in one memo by Ben-Gurion that references a biblical verse and a prophetic pun from the prophet Hosea. There are two words in Hebrew that can reference a husband. The first, Baal, has other connotations in Hebrew that are more negative. It can also refer, in a monetary context, to a relationship of power of one over the other. And Baal is also the name of one of the Canaanite gods. The other Hebrew word for husband is Ish. In Hebrew, Ish and Isha can be rendered man and woman, but also husband and wife. Thus, God, in the book of Hosea, speaks of a moment when, as the divine spouse of Israel, he will not be Israel's Baal, but rather her Ish. This brings us to 1953, when Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion sent a brief memo to the finance minister, referencing a tax deduction form that included words for husband and wife. Ben-Gurion's memo read, quote, "I signed today regarding the declaration of the worker for the purpose of tax deductions. In the declaration, in paragraph 4, it says Ba'ali / Ishti. And he added, in my opinion, it should say Ishi, Ishti, adding further that in the word Baal, there is implication of power and idolatry." End quote. In other words, Ben-Gurion was writing that the form should use the word Ishi for my husband, rather than Ba'ali, inspired by the book of Hosea. Indeed, he concluded his memo by writing, quote, "Do in accordance with Hosea the prophet," end quote. As far as I know, the finance minister proceeded to ignore Ben-Gurion's memo, but the remarkable note truly testifies to Ben-Gurion's desire to root modern Israel's civic culture in ancient biblical texts and to the miracle that was the resurrected language of spoken Hebrew that was made manifest there. During this period, Israel faced many difficulties and it also experienced an incredible growth of population due not only to the arrival of many European Jews, but also Jews from Middle Eastern countries, of which a great amount were effectively expelled by governments that were now enemies of the Jewish state. The historian Anita Shapira writes, quote, "The state's first 4 years were dramatic. The Jewish population doubled in size and had to be provided with food, housing, employment, and education. Ben-Gurion, who had always claimed that he did not understand economics, fired off cables to Israel's embassy in Washington. The wheat and cereal situation is dire. By the end of February, there will be no bread. By the end of January, there will be no feed for the chicken farms. The winter of 1951 to 1952 was particularly harsh, and the immigrant and transit camps suffered storms, flooding, and shortages. The waves of immigration that inundated the country were not planned. Some immigrants came from DP camps in Germany, others from the Cyprus detention camps, from Romania and Poland, which had not yet closed their gates, and from Bulgaria, which also allowed Jews to leave. But immigration from the European countries was quickly exhausted. Most of the immigrants came from the Mediterranean countries, Iraq, Yemen, Libya, and the Maghreb, end quote. Meanwhile, in the 1950s, the party of Menachem Begin seemed incredibly weak, faltering from its initial showing. Avi Shilon further tells us, quote, on July 30th, 1951, when the election results were published, it became clear that Herut had failed miserably, and this time Begin could not ignore the results. Only 6% had voted for Herut, which now had only 8 seats in the Knesset. Mapai maintained its previous number of seats, 45, end quote. In the face of this political setback, Begin took leave from his leadership of Herut and effectively became a hermit for several months, or as Avi Shilon puts it, quote, from September 1951 to January 1952, he lived in a rented room at the Arza Guesthouse near Jerusalem, where he studied for the bar exam and began writing about his days in a Soviet prison. The house director recalled that Begin was mostly busy writing his memoirs, which were later published under the title White Nights, end quote. We must pause our account here, ladies and gentlemen, to note that if Begin began his seclusion in disappointment, feeling the failure of his electoral attempts, there is nevertheless something to celebrate in this separation from politics, because the memoir that Begin worked on during this period, White Nights, is one of the most moving books about Zionism written in the 20th century. A remembrance of his time in Soviet prison, a masterpiece worthy of being read together with Natan Sharansky's prison memoir, Fear No Evil. As Begin's son, Binyamin Begin, notes in the preface of the current version, Menachem Begin wrote the book from memory, and his accounts of his interrogation ended up, incredibly, being verified decades later after the fall of the Soviet Union, when records of the interrogation of Begin were obtained. The stories that Sharansky and Begin tell are in a certain sense opposites from one another, because the drama of Sharansky's story lies in part in the fact that he, Sharansky, came to prison with little Judaic knowledge, but grew in Judaic awareness through his discovery of David's Psalms and of the Bible in general, whereas Begin, in prison, drew on his deep reservoir of Judaic experience.
The Menachem Begin Heritage Center is the national commemoration project honoring and preserving the legacy of Israel's 6th Prime Minister. The Begin Center houses a library, archives, research center, educational department, and a full museum. Its mission is to pass on to the next generation the principles of Menachem Begin's values-driven leadership, and to provide a space to explore what that means in today's complicated world. Visit the Begin Center in the heart of Jerusalem to experience the life and times of Menachem Begin.
But the memoirs are also profoundly similar in that both emphasize a belief in the bond that Jews share. In White Nights, Begin recalls a conversation in prison with two non-Jewish Polish cellmates, where he was told that, quote, your people guard your solidarity under all circumstances, end quote. Begin reconstructs in his memoir his silent reaction to this outburst. He reflected, quote, what was there for me to reply to their contentions? They both spoke of Jewish solidarity as if it were a crime, as if they were talking about a conspiracy, something evil. For heaven's sake, I thought to myself, what have the Jews not done to prove that they do not stick together? End quote. In other words, Begin mourned the fact that Jews were not always united. And he added in the memoir that, quote, this fictitious Jewish solidarity exists and will always exist in the minds of others. And if that is the case, I asked myself, has the time not come to strip it of the slur of a crime, the accusation of a conspiracy? End quote. In other words, Begin was arguing that Jewish unity should become a reality. Or, as he further put it, quote, has not the time come to convert Jewish solidarity from a Gentile myth into a Jewish reality, end quote. So Begin wrote in White Nights, and it is striking to know that Begin may well have written these words at a time when the Prime Minister of Israel refused to even say his name, at a time when he felt cut off from the body politic. Begin rejoined the Knesset during the very painful debate over whether Israel should take funds from Germany, a debate in which very strong words were expressed by those advocating both positions. And while the feelings were very raw from that debate, it was from that moment that we can trace the time that Begin made manifest a gift that was central to his future political rise, oratory. As Avi Shilon writes in his biography of Begin, quote, with his thunderous speeches, Begin gradually improved his image and gained influence as the greatest speaker in Israel at the time. He appealed to people's emotions and spirit of curiosity, even when speaking to educated listeners. And as his internal dialogue ran on both these levels of communication, He had no difficulty stimulating people's enthusiasm. He even tended to insert Latin quotations in his speeches in order to impress the audience with the use of a language that not all of them understood. The journalists who mocked him did not realize that Begin had figured out that his audience did not always need to understand everything that was being said. Rather, listeners preferred a leader who seemed to know more than they, and they viewed him as a father figure, end quote. In other words, with the hindsight of history, we can look back and see in the 1950s the seeds sown for Begin's political rise in the future. Few would have predicted in the early years of Israel that Menachem Begin would be prime minister of the country. But looking back, we can find the roots in the 1950s of another Israeli political era yet to come. Avi Shilon tells us fascinatingly that after Israel's first elections, an activist from Ben-Gurion's party noted that, quote, in 10 neighborhoods in Tel Aviv, in which most of the residents are Sephardim, 2,500 of 3,300 voters voted for Chirut, end quote. And that this political activist from Ben-Gurion's party further added, quote unquote, I hope we can change this. That activist, from his political perspective, was right to be worried, because the Sephardic Jews that came to the country would ultimately be one of the central foundations of the future Mahapach, or political upheaval, of the 1970s. Avi Shilon describes the bond formed between Begin and these immigrants to Israel, a bond that was first formed in the 1950s, a bond that was founded on the deep connection that Menachem Begin felt to the Jewish people as a whole. Shilon writes, quote, on June 30th, 1951, 2 weeks before the elections, Begin and an interpreter traveled to a transit camp in Rehovot that was populated mostly by Iraqi immigrants. The trip was made in a Cadillac purchased by Etzel supporters from the United States. When he stepped out of the car wearing a hat, the people who gathered around him started to call out, Yaish, Yaish, Yaish. Because he feared that the crowd did not recognize him, he asked the interpreter, why do they call me Yaish? The interpreter, assigned by Chirut members who had neglected to verify whether he was fluent in Iraqi Arabic, told him they were iterating the word, long live. It was almost the last correct translation he conveyed, but it did not matter. The affection they showered on him, the candy thrown at him, the kisses and the shouts of joy captured his heart. Before he mounted the temporary stage erected in his honor, he kissed every person who happened to be along the way, end quote. It might seem to someone who did not understand all that was transpiring here that this man from Poland, Menachem Begin, might have little in common with these Jews from Iraq. But such an assumption would be profoundly wrong, because in fact, Begin felt profoundly connected to these Jews. The Ahavat Yisrael, the love of the Jewish people, that Begin preached to himself in prison, was made manifest here, creating a bond that would have tremendous implications for Israel's future. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.